For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to week two of the Tiger Minor League recap here over at TigerMLReport.com. I'm Alex Steele. I'm Miss Chris Brown. And thanks so much for everybody tuning in last week. Special thanks to Greg for being our guest. And so now if you are part of our super, so now we have super chats. So one of the things that Greg suggested last week was, and he gave us his permission to use his call. So anytime that somebody gives us some money on the super chat side, they'll hear something like this.
Apple is gone. Such a bold time.
Or they'll hear something like this.
Exquisite.
Now we did. I don't think we cleared that one with Dan, but.
I let Dan know. I messaged him. I let him know. I let him know.
Right, so yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I just thought it would be funny because that was from his, of course, his golf call. But I just like how quick and concise exquisite is. And exquisite's a word that you don't hear outside of golf or like fine dining. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, definitely. It was one of those things too where I was, he got a lot of pub. He got Sports Illustrated. He got a lot for that. And that was good for him. And I was glad that he was able to, it was a different type of call on a game that I know some people are like, well, it's not what you normally hear in broadcasting side of things, but we talked about that a little bit last week, but he's still getting some pub for it. So, gentlemen, everybody on YouTube chat, thanks for joining us. But like I said, if you are new to the Super Chat feature, if you want to help us donate, there's a little green dollar sign, or not green, little dollar sign thing right there, and just show your support. And if you do, you get one of these little...
Exquisite.
Or...
Apple is gone!
Just wanted to reset that, but... A lot to get to this evening. We're going to start with recap. Oh, wait a minute. We already got one already. So thank you, Henry.
Exquisite.
Oh. Henry.
Yeah.
Hey, all right. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. So we'll also be taking questions in a little bit, but let's start with Toledo. And a big week for Justin Henry Molloy, Chris, as he continues to hit. One of the things that we've been getting questions about is his defense a little bit. And Toledo, again, playing a very bad AAA Louisville team who are the affiliate of the Reds. And they're not good at all. They don't really have anybody to write home about. So in terms of being top 10, top 30 prospects, or just prospects in general, they have a few guys down there that are on, I believe it was more or less injury assignments, but they canceled today's game, but they took four out of five from the bats. So Justin Henry Molloy had a really good week, and it seems like he is coming into his own. So again, the questions about his defense, Chris, we had questions whether or not he has a range, but as far as I'm concerned, what I've been seeing down Toledo, he seems fine at third, or am I just imagining that? Or
no, you're right. It is with him, he doesn't have ideal range. It's two steps in a dive, basically, which is, we knew that when they traded for him. He's not an excellent defender, but he's passable, and you know what he gets to, he catches, and he makes good throws to first. I think he'll be fine at third base. Now, who knows? Maybe he'll be tested more in the major leagues. But yeah, I think he's completely passable there. And yeah, his offense, what he did in his first week or first 10 games, whatever, he kept getting on base with singles and walks, and he was hitting the ball hard, just nothing to the gaps. And then this week, he finally started getting some extra base hits, a couple doubles and a home run while still walking, I think, five times. If I'm not mistaken, he is first or second in AAA in both hits and walks so far this year. At least he was heading into the day. I don't know after today because they, as you said, they were rained out. But yeah, he's doing exactly what everybody hoped for. He's an on-base machine. He's super annoying to opposing pitchers because it's hard to get him out. And yeah, we're going to see him in Detroit at some point this year. I just don't know when.
And Sean has a question in the chat. Short sample size, but it's blown you away this far on all three levels. We'll get to that shortly. That's a pretty good question.
Blown us away.
Who has blown us away? I got two candidates in mind that I'm thinking of right now. The second one I'm unsure about, but I think, yeah. But to the tune of this week, he has hit 412, 565, 706 with an OPS of over 1,000. And we're talking, you were talking about this earlier, Chris, with the extra, but it's the extra base power, two doubles, a home run. And in total, too, he was five walks to five strikeouts. So that's a good, nice ratio there for him. Another person that's been, I think, had a really good week, too, was Andre Lipsius, who we saw a little press last week, a little bit, where in the opener and even in the home all series, from the opener, he seemed like he was overswinging a little bit. He seemed like he was a little anxious. I'll take the 389, 455, 722 all day. And he had a home run. He had his first home run of the season, I believe it was. Was that his first home run of the season?
I thought he had a homer earlier in the year.
Maybe no, you know what? I think he did against St. Paul, didn't he?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, no, this past week was much more what we expected. We knew it was coming. We've seen enough of Lipsius forever to know that it tends to happen. He'll struggle for a week at a new level or at the beginning of the year, and then he figures it out. Now, who knows once he gets to the majors if that'll happen. But, yeah, he walked, I think, three times, struck out three times. So the walks will creep up. I think the strikeouts will lower a little bit. And he hit for some power. He got that WRC plus, just creeped right over 100. I think it's 101 right now. But that's going to keep going up because of how well he gets on base. So that was good to see, too. Again, you mentioned it before. Now, this is not a good team. They're not facing elite pitching here by any means. But you gotta put up numbers when you can, and they're doing that.
And one person who didn't have a good week in terms of he had a triple earlier today, but the game was rained out, unfortunately, so it doesn't count, was Parker Meadows, who batted only just 190. This week he struck out 10 times, only walked once. But again, this is one of those situations where once teams start figuring him out, the swing he had today was good. It was I'll shoot, go look for it real quick. I thought his swing here, like put his hands in and was able to, I think, drive the ball to right field for this triple. And just I find it just sucks that the game was canceled because the game, I think his batting average would have been over 200 today.
Yeah, he pulled it right down the line, right? Yeah. Parker Meadows, he was like 4 for 21 on the week. Yeah, the 10 strikeouts is a concern there, but I don't know. We've seen enough from him last year in spring training this year, the first couple weeks of the AAA season, that I'm not too worried about him. I think it was just a rough week for him, but we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it to make sure that he's sticking with it. Maybe, who knows, maybe the issue is with his brother on his mind.
Yeah, it could be the case too. And you know, I'm not really worried about it because he does go through these spells where he is a little bit inconsistent, and then he just starts raking again.
And the beauty about Parker Meadows will always be that he's a legit center fielder with plus speed.
Yeah.
At least 65 grade speed, if you will. He's gonna always provide you some value on defense.
So if you're watching us on YouTube right now, and some of these clips I'll put in the podcast description. Excuse me. This is where we're talking about Meadows here, and then we'll replay it here in a second. It's gonna come up and watch his hands right here, just whoosh, just it, and then pulls it down. It was nice and he's hidden there.
Yeah, and he runs like a deer, right?
He's
at third base. As soon as they turn the camera, he's like, where is he? Nope.
Oh, there he is. He's at third already.
Yeah, like he's very fast. So the tools are there. Just want the production to pick up a little bit, but I'm not terribly concerned about Parker Meadows right now. The one other guy that I think is worth talking about is Andy Ibañez.
Yes.
He's 30 years old.
Okay. Stan's a big fan of him.
We know that he's been in the majors before, had some success, but we're talking more like a Willy Castro, Harold Castro type player here, like somebody who's going to be a bit player at best. But he's really playing well, and it wouldn't shock me at all if we see him before we see some of the prospects that people want to see, just because that's how it works in baseball. But yeah, I mean, he's off to a terrific start. He's got a 187 WRC plus right now. It was five home runs, two home runs and two doubles this week, I think. So he's hitting well. And that's what you got to do if you're in AAA. You got to make yourself known right before you get your chance. So worth highlighting him, I think.
Definitely. He's 8 for 16 on the week. Two home runs, three walks, two strikeouts. Nice OPS. And when he hits a home run, he bombs it. He's got some really good power there. And I think he's starting to get it in the shape. Not physically, but maybe perhaps he did have a hand injury? Wasn't spring training?
I don't remember what it was that bothered him, but he went off with Team Cuba, and then he was banged by a little bit of an injury. But he's mostly been playing first base, I think, but he's also can play second base and third base. So there's some utility there. And like I said, if there's an injury down the line or gets released, don't be shocked if he gets to the first call, just because they want to make sure. But we'll see.
as far as in the pitching side of things, this is where Toledo, this is where it's, I think, a kind of a theme across, I don't want to say across the system per se, but yeah, Toledo right now, Reese Olson has not looked good. It was a hit by pitch, Stan. Thank you. Okay, that's right. Yeah. Reese Olson has not looked good. 9 innings. He got lit up again by Louisville. Not this far in 3 games, last 3 starts, 9 innings, 16 hits, 14 earned runs, 4 home runs, 15. The strikeouts are good. Strikeouts are there, but it's that secondary stuff where I'm talking about where it seems like to me that he's not getting his slider over consistently. The miles per hour, we got him down in 95, 96, which is a good sign. But again, this is where you're just thinking because he was injured, he's going to get a swing of things a little bit, but 3 starts in, I don't know, man.
No, it's command. It's command, and that's the big thing for all pitchers, really. And we like Reese Olson, but you have to. People are always like, oh, you know, what a con job that they got over the Brewers. The Brewers aren't dumb. The Brewers have one of the better under the radar player development systems out there. They really they manage to churn out some pretty good players who stay. Because it's Milwaukee, they stay under the radar for the most part. But look at some of the guys they've produced over the last few years, and Corbin Burns and Jackson Chourio coming through the system. So they knew that Reese Olson was probably limited to a bullpen role. Now, you know, he has looked great as a starter at times, but if you can't put the ball where you need it to, or where you need to, unless you have just absolutely monster stuff, you're going to struggle. And that's what's happened. I think, like, to your point, yeah, the slider. The slider always seems to break right over the heart of the plate. Now, there are times when he can locate it away and get a swing and miss. And when he does that, he gets swings and misses, like I said, because the stuff is decent. It's just he's not putting it where he needs to. The changeup is the pitch that he usually has the best command of. I haven't been zeroed in on all his outings this year to see how that's going. But the main issue has always been the fastball command, right? It's not a great pitch from a metrics perspective in terms of induced vertical break and all that good stuff. So he really has to locate that, and he hasn't, and these hitters are making him pay. I think they're going to continue to roll him out as a starter because they can. It's the minors, and you want to just get the guy as much work as you want to. And who knows? He was dealing with some injuries, so maybe he's just a little bit behind. The velocity's there, but maybe the mechanics aren't fully in sync, so he's not commanding as well as he'd like to. But, yeah, it wouldn't shock me. And we projected him to the bullpen all along, I think.
Yeah.
At some point later this year, we may see that move happen. But I don't think they're going to panic. I think they're going to want to get him innings more than put him in that bullpen role right now because they've got a small army of other bullpen guys they want to try first, probably.
Yeah. Speaking of which, by the way, if you look at the stats, here's why you don't ever judge the box score when it comes to things like this. Tyler Holton, for example. Tyler Holton got called up, he was on the 40 man. You're probably thinking, why did Tyler Holton get called up? It's usually somebody in an organization says, hey, don't worry about the stuff. Don't worry about the stat line. Look at his stuff. And he came in and was clutch yesterday for the Tigers against the Giants. They needed innings out of their bullpen. They got 7 scoreless innings. And then was it Cody Saberhagen tweeted out the first time since 2013 that they've gotten that in the extra innings. And it was, to me, it was just a sign of just, you look at his stat line, 7 innings, 6 hits, 6 runs, 4 home runs allowed, but he struck out 7. I think that's a big thing right there. That it's sometimes it's a little more than the stuff. Holton, I think, was topping out 92, I think 93 when we saw him, something like that. But I'll have to double check my notes on that. But that's where you get that kind of you don't scout the box scores for that, because that's just, it doesn't work out that way.
Yeah, when they first got Holton, I thought he looked pretty good in spring. I thought he looked a little bit like a younger, I don't actually know if he is younger, like another Tyler Alexander, where it's kind of a lefty with below average velo, but he's got feel for a cutter, I think, and a changeup, and he's got enough pitches. He didn't have a great spring, wasn't doing great in AAA, but they called him up and he performed, and that's, they believed him. It was something I put in our little Tigers minor league Twitter chat, where I was messing around. Now we have Jerry working on this, automating it, where you can get all the StatCast data is available for both Lakeland and Toledo this year. And I was collecting it manually, basically copying and pasting every game. And Jerry Mackinen, or I don't know his actual name. Sorry.
Jerry. Oh, yeah, Jerry. Yeah.
I just pronounced the name.
I just call him Jerry M. Yeah.
Yeah, Jerry M. He figured out a way to process it and automate it so I don't have to do that anymore. But one thing, and then I put in a little induced vertical break formula. And one thing I noticed was all the guys the Tigers added in the offseason, all these minor league free agents, they all can produce above average IVB, which is something that teams have been noticing more and more is what really helps a fastball play up. And Holton's on there, Rosenthal was on there, Kervin Castro, Ashton Godot, they were all up there. So I think there's something to that, that they appear to have a plan there or something they're targeting. And beyond that, when you look at the Lakeland data, Melton up there, and you see some of the guys that they signed as non-drafted free agents, Max Alba and Garrett Apker, they're both up there too. So I think that's something the Tigers may be targeting now, or maybe it's just a coincidence. But in any event, something Holton does worked out for them, and they liked it. And so he got his spot in the bullpen, and he ran with it. And we'll see what he does with it going forward.
And I believe that – I don't believe in coincidences when it comes to the – before with the Tigers, previous regimes, perhaps, I did. But I think there's a method to the madness to it. And by the way, Trevor Rosenthal hit the IL this week. He's on the 7-day IL. For what? I'm not exactly sure. Let's get to the questions real quick, because there's two questions in here that I wanted to address before we move on and talk a little more about the pitchers. But to Sean's question, was blown you, because he did pay again the $10, so thank you for the super chat. So we want to make sure we answer that question. Was blown away so far on all three levels. So I'm going to say for myself, it has been really the play of Roberto Campos, because this is a guy who he's coming again. This is when we asked him for West Michigan. He has not played in the cold weather. He's just 19 years old. And this weekend in Lansing, I don't know what it is. Like Chris and I have talked about, we should do a study on Jackson Field effects on West Michigan Whitecaps bats, because it's always some way to stay up this week. They scored 14 runs, I think, Thursday or Friday. Was it Friday when you went?
That was a debacle. They were three walks short of the Lansing record. But hey, Henry.
Thank you. You know what? Hold on. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Wait, is that exquisite?
Thank you, Henry.
Is that a double dip from Henry?
That's a double dip from Henry. So
double dip.
You know what? Double dip. That means a double.
Apple is good.
All right. Thank you, Henry.
Touch them all time.
No, now, but go ahead, Chris.
I don't know if we should couch it as like guys who are performing better than we expected or guys who are just playing really well so far. Because
Then if you're gonna go in that regard, then if you're gonna talk about guys who we didn't expect to blow us away, I would go with Ben Algieri is up there. But I also will go with Gage Workman. We'll talk about Gage Workman later, because that's a separate segment altogether. But Algieri has come out and hit like gangbusters for West Michigan, and we did put him on our prospect list that was potentially break out, and he's doing it on a consistent basis.
Yeah, no, that's, I guess you've covered most of the guys so far. Unfortunately, I can't think of a pitcher blowing me away right now, which is a bummer. But yeah, I would say Malloy has been really impressive. I would say Workman has been extremely impressive. And to your point, yeah, Campos, Malgieri, and Pacheco too. And we'll get into Pacheco a little bit more too. Yeah, there's some really good early season performances.
One of the things too that somebody was talking about was some dick on Twitter was saying something about Pacheco. It was like, the batting average is 200, typical Tigers. Stan, yeah, you know what? Stan has actually, we'll talk about Stan. That's a good one. We'll bring him up too, because he has been actually the most consistent pitcher in the Tiger system.
Yeah,
out of starters, that's a really good one. I didn't even.
Lefty in West Michigan.
Yeah, but he's in terms of even starters, he's the only one that has been just virtually him and Brent Hurdler. Yeah, Brent Hurdler actually put on there too.
Yeah, Herder's been walking some guys a little bit, but he, before Sawyer Gibson Long today, he probably had the most success against a super pesky Altoona team in Erie. But we'll get to all these guys in a little bit. But
yeah. I definitely want to talk about what we saw in Erie too. Because screw Altoona, by the way.
Yeah,
so.
The Pacheco thing, just to your point, yeah, somebody was complaining about him scraping 200. His BABIP right now is 150. He's hitting the tar out of the ball. He's got 6 walks to 6 strikeouts. It's a 17% walk rate, a 17% strikeout rate. He's doing fine. The balls just aren't falling right now. So don't worry about the batting average just yet.
I see the reason why I was about Campos is the reason why I'm blown away only because of simply this. It's continuous improvement of his swing. Like we've talked about swing mechanics since he's been in rookie ball. And so I think that he's talking about getting the ball air more. Guess what? That's what he did this week. He had a home run. He had a double. Was it a three hit game? Was it on Friday? Yep. Okay. Yeah.
Home run, double, and a single. And I'll tell you what impressed me the most watching him these last couple of days the hard contact in the line drives everywhere. He's got an approach. He's got a good eye. For a 19-year-old man, he's not jumpy at all. He doesn't chase very often. Like you can get him with breaking balls away if it's a good one, like a lot of good hitters. But yeah, he was taking a lot of pitches. I don't know how many times he walked this week, but I would say probably three or four. Yeah, he looks like the complete package, and he's not bad in the outfield. I don't know if he's a center fielder and at the highest level, but he's completely fine in the center field right now because when they signed him, he was a big dude, right? And you thought maybe, all right, he's just going to continue to fill out. He looks kind of like one of those big dudes who just stays big and athletic, like more like a wide receiver than growing into a linebacker or whatever like you feared. He looks like a guy who's going to be potentially above average defensive fielder. So that adds a lot to the profile too. So I was really impressed with him this week.
So you're asking how many times did he walk this week? He did walk four times. So how many times did he strike out this week? Three times. So on the season, he's six walks at seven strikeouts, but his strikeout to walk ratio was a good week this week for him. And you're right, Chris. I expected a hulking massive man when we met him, but his speed too, his quick, like it was something I noticed last year in Lakeland. When he comes out of the box, he's really quick out of the box. He's got a really good, and it surprised you because I thought he would necessarily lumber, but it's just, he is very athletic, but he can, that gazelle, like we were talking earlier about Parker Meadows, he just glides out there.
Yeah, I don't think he has like a really great top gear, if you will, but I think I put in my live looks, he's an athletic mover. Like he moves, it's fluid. He moves quickly. It's average-ish run times to first base, but probably a tick above underway. So if he's legging out a double. So yeah, you got to give the Tigers international staff credit for that. We've dogged them forever, but he looks like he could be the real deal. And he was a kid that nobody was on from what we could tell. So that could be a really fun one. Yeah, I was impressed with him, but we're still hanging in Toledo, I think.
A couple actual transactions took place in Toledo before we move on to Erie and talk about what we saw in Erie. So Garrett Hill and Ryan Kreidler were sent down to make room for Tyler Holden and Michael Lorenzen was called up. Yeah. So yeah, Toledo right now is 9-5, and they are pretty good. Sergio's kind of doing something sacrilegious. We'll get to that in a second. Sacrilegious, saying something about Christian Santana. No, but as far as Toledo goes, this week coming up, and you can go, by the way, if you go to the front page, our website, tigermlreport.com, we're putting the weekly schedule up there so you can see who they're playing next. So they're going down to Columbus for 6. Of course, that starts on Tuesday with a traditional Monday day off. As far as anybody that potentially might be called out, because I'm trying to do this in terms of like segments and part of the segments, I think right now, the Tigers are going to see what they have with McKinstry and potentially in terms of even the bullpen arm wise. I'm not sure if anything's going to call up wise, but it's good to see Lipsius, Malloy, and somebody mentioned it in their chat, by the way. It was Sergio mentioned Brendan White. Brendan White continues to pitch well, and I think he's just going to, just a matter of time for him. It's just a matter of maybe, I'm not sure when, but I think it's going to be more sooner than later at this point.
Yeah, he's on the 40-man. They're going to call him up eventually. I thought maybe he was going to come up instead of Holton, but he'll get his turn. And yeah, there's Andrew Magno has been pitching fairly well. There's always going to be some, he's going to miss the zone a little bit. That's just the way it is. But he's a lefty. He hit 96.7, I think it was, on his final fastball the other night. Registers as 97 with a decent curveball from a lefty with an interesting arm angle. We've always thought about it. He's going to get to the big leagues at some point, I think. It's just, will he stay there? I don't know. But
I know Ohio State fans love Love him.
Yeah. And he's a fun guy to root for because, yeah, I remember what he was like a 15th round pick, I think. I'm trying to think. Zabala is still down there throwing 101 with not a great idea where it's going.
Yeah.
But it's a good arm. And Will Vest is still a little bit iffy, but you said, I think
he pitched his first clean inning in the entire spring earlier this week. So that's something. His velocity was back too, like 96, which was lacking because he was getting 94, 93, and they hit at 96 for the first time. I did want to, before we move on, I forgot to mention Alex Fiedo. We had another good start. He only, again, he's faced Omaha twice, but against Louisville, his start wasn't bad. Four innings, three hits, two runs, a lot of home run, one walk to five strikeouts. And on the season, he's only given up two walks. The walks has been a problem before, but again, his velocity's been there. And the in terms of swing and miss stuff, Chris, I think he was one of the starts, I think, against Omaha. It was like 10 or 11 swings and misses or something to that effect.
Yeah, his second start. His first start was it was really cold and he just wasn't really working. And yeah, his second start, he got the swings and misses. And we've seen that even in Detroit, where occasionally his slider will really have that bite to it and get a lot of swings and misses. In his most recent start, he actually had all three pitches working. I got the StatCast data up right here.
Nice.
He got three whiffs on his four-seamer, three on his slider, and four on his changeup. So he was throwing his changeup a little bit more. It's nice to see that. So we were curious if they were going to permanently move him to the bullpen or keep him as starter depth. And right now it looks like starter depth. And if he can keep throwing three pitches, fastballs 90 to 94, sitting at 92 and a half, that it's nothing special, but it'll work if he works in all the other pitches too. Yeah, it's nice to have at least one kind of depth arm hanging there in Toledo if you need it.
Yeah, and I'm the more I thought about it too, I thought it was originally like, oh, maybe he'll be better off in the bullpen. But in reality, I think he wants to start. I think he's better as a starter too. So I think it's just better suits the Tigers too, not even from a depth standpoint, but from an overall development standpoint. I think if he can continue to pitch well like this, Toledo, in terms of the rotation, is just like it's a hodgepodge rotation of just sorts of trying to more or less try to figure out what they have bullpen arms for Detroit, essentially. But to have a guy like Fiedo there, especially if you have Mike Lorenz, what knows what's going to happen in the rotation. So,
yeah, you got Hanafy's pitching fine. Zach Lowe is pitching. I think Fiedo is probably the most likely who would come up to for a spot start or replace somebody in the rotation.
So we moved to Erie. We were there on Tuesday and Wednesday, and it was two gorgeous days in Erie. I honestly believe it was just one of those perfect scenario situations in terms of weather this week that Erie was also just as good as it was in Michigan. A little bit of a breeze coming off the lake, of course, but that was a little windy. It was windy on, was it Wednesday? Was it? Wednesday, right?
Yeah. It was windy both days?
Yeah, it just seems like it was more windier it was windier the day before because at night it seems like it was
the windier, opening day. Yeah. And then it calmed down towards the end of the game. But Erie, we caught a couple rough games where they just seemed out of sorts. And then, Tuna was just taking everything that the only pitcher in the two games we saw that shut them down in any capacity was Higginbotham, the lefty they got in the Justin Henry Malloy trade, who I think worked two scoreless innings. But Altoona was just, they were sitting on fastballs and hitting them hard the other way. They weren't swinging at breaking balls. It was really annoying. And they were hitting for power, like a lot of it.
Doesn't help either. They are the oldest team in the Eastern League. They had, I think, three or four ex-major leaguers on that roster, which is highly unusual to see at AA. And, Mr. Bloodwright, you, sir, thank you for the $10.
Exquisite.
And you know what? I'm going to give you this one, too. Actually.
Yeah, you get a double banger.
Double banger.
That ball is gone. Such a all-time.
All right, Blood, thank you for that.
Yeah, so we were there for opening day. We drove out there. It was one of our, we go two, three times a year.
Yes.
Depends on what's happening. And it was the usual 4 or 5 hour road trip where we stop at Sheets, and I ate 8 types of fried food that day. So I'm rest in peace to me soon. But we got, so with Sawyer Gibson Long starting that game, and he pitched 4 innings. 3 of them were great. 1 was not so great. And unfortunately, we talked about the wind. He would have gotten out of it. He got a pop-up that Colt Keith at third base, I don't want to say misplayed it, but he's just not used to the wind there. And he was over by the fence and the wind blew the ball back like 10 feet towards the field. It was still a foul ball, but he didn't catch it. And then everything snowballed after that and was hard contact. But then he came back and started throwing that slider and he got a lot of swings and misses with that slider. That was like the one breaking pitch that Altoona couldn't handle from anybody on the staff this week. And he pitched well again today. I think, 9 strikeouts?
Yeah, and that was exactly what I was going to say. I watched his whole start. I have it all in Premiere. I got to finish cutting it up. But he actually was able, his fastball, as they said, Sam and Greg both were saying was crisp. I was trying to understand what that meant, but crisp. But it did. It looked a lot better. He was able to command it a lot better than he did on Tuesday. And his slider was generating a lot of swings and misses on it today. I thought he had a really good job of commanding the strike zone. He got through some quick innings and gave Erie's bullpen a much, much needed rest because in terms of what we saw on Tuesday and Wednesday was outright ridiculous. Wilmer Flores was charting. So Chris and I have a system. I'll take the radar. I'll just start writing down miles per hour. And when that happens, our radar gun though is weird because the second battery wasn't charged. Chris thought he charged it and wasn't working. So then the other battery, so we had to I had to be delicate with how much time I was using it, but I got enough from Flores though, because he got hit so hard in the first inning and it was whenever he threw the changeup, he was trying to throw a changeup, which was coming in around 80. It was getting hammered. And the only time his out pitch was always his fastball. So he was using his fastball to get out of the innings and his slider got hit up a couple times too. So that was a little bit out there. And Billy Lesner, I'm not sure. Again, Billy, 89, 91, something like that.
I think, yeah, it was mostly 80, like 89, 91. I think he hit 93 a couple times. Flores was 92, 94, hit 95 several times. Yeah, we touched on in our other podcast, I mentioned that Flores against Altoona in AA has like 24.50 ERA in 3 starts.
I don't get it.
Against every other team in like 19 other starts in AA, it's a 2.04 ERA. He's awesome against everybody else, and Altoona just has his number. And did Stan just give us 4.99?
Yes, he did. Oh,
exquisite.
Stan,
that ball is gone. Such a multi-time.
But he's paid us like 3 times in one chat. I feel.
Oh, that was the first time. That was his first time. Oh. This is the first time. It was Henry that paid us.
Who was it? I'm sorry. Take the money back from me messing your name up. But yeah, Flores, it just didn't look. We've seen Flores in person 3 times now. I think we saw him twice at the end of last year. And yeah, it just didn't look right until he had given up a bunch of runs. And then it was FU time. And he reared back and threw a bunch of fastballs right past Henry Davis.
Yeah.
And then he struck him out and then they pulled him. So that was, I don't know if he just got upset or. Maybe we didn't stick around to talk to Alvarez or the players just because the way it worked out, next day the game was at noon, so we showed up at 9. But if it's like a 6 o'clock game, we'll show up at 2. We can hang out and talk to the manager, the coaches, and stuff like that. But I don't know if they were just making Flores work on something.
Yeah, I think they were. I think the reason why when I was charting his pitches, it looked like he was trying to throw exclusively his changeup and his slider. And then the fastball is more like, I know this works. I'll use that to get out of the inning. And especially with Dan Hasty, by the way, will be on the pod next week, more likely. But we asked him to be a guest today this week. He has some stuff going on, but he will more likely be joining us here in the next week or two. But anyway, yeah, so but looking at the charting of it all, I think he was working on something. It was the same thing what we saw down in Toledo with the likes of Dan Hasty, I should say. Sorry, Dan Hasty, not Dan Dickerson. Dan Dickerson, I'll have to figure that out because I do see him at the ballpark, and I don't like to bug him too much, so we'll see. During this time of year, he's in a zone. So I was going to ask him during spring training, and I just...
No, it's fine. We'll get him when the Tigers call somebody up that he doesn't know about, and he'll ask you, and you go,
Let me tell you.
Quit pro quo, Dan.
That happened last year a couple times, but it's... I don't know, like, what was concerning to me, though, was the fact that Erie's bullpen was worked a little bit, but it was good to see Austin Bergner. They came back and scored 13 runs on Thursday, winning 13-10 on a walk-off home run by Colt Keith. which was his first home run in Double A. And he had a little bit of a tough series, a little pressed on times.
Yeah, I think we mentioned this with Lipsius, and Cole Keith is the same way. He tends to be a slow starter at a new level. And it for him, I wasn't concerned by what I saw, really. Like, he chased a high fastball once, I think, was rough. But other than that, he was working good at bats. He just was getting under the ball a bit, it seemed like. And a couple times he poked singles. It was nice. He got an infield double on a pop-up thanks to the sun.
That was funny. Yeah, he was hustling, though, man. That was good.
Yeah. I think he'll be fine in another week or so. I think he got today off. That's not unusual in a six-game series. The guys get a day off. But, yeah, I'm not too worried about Cole Keith. And it was good to see him get that first home run and have it be a walk-off. That was awesome. So, yeah, but that's the thing. Like, we caught probably two of the worst games they played all week.
Dr. Hans. Was it?
Fuchs.
Hans Fuchs.
Doctor?
Exquisite. Hold on. Wait, he gets two of this because of his doctor, his name.
Exquisite.
Exquisite. He's a double exquisite?
Double exquisite in a...
Apple is gone. Such a mold time.
Dr. Hans.
Yeah. So...
I'm sorry.
No, we did see... He made one nice defensive play, but that came after he booted a ball a little bit. He wasn't... You know, he was ranging over towards shortstop and was trying to grab the ball and throw it, and it bounced off his glove. And we've seen that. We saw it in West Michigan. Cole Keith doesn't have the best hands. I think that's going to be an issue for him going forward. He's working on it. We know that he wants to be like a gold glove level defender, and he's going to keep trying. But I do still think – I'm still kind of 50-50 that he's going to end up in the outfield.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think his bat will come around just fine.
Bats were coming around, by the way. The one bat we did see on Wednesday that came out in full display was Gage Workman, yes, who was just a double away from the cycle. And he's like, ah, screw it, I'll hit another home run. He was...
Right-handed home run, too.
Yeah, right-handed home run. He had 12 total bases in Wednesday's loss. And for the year, and then today he had two doubles today, his first two doubles of the season. And yesterday was a catalyst. The best part about this series was I did some data searching. Chris, the only time he only struck out three times, and that was in one game. So on the year right now, and this is all early sample size, so again, small sample size, he has walking at a 25% clip, which is he's always had he strikes out a lot, but he's also had a decent. But the fact is that I think Workman was hitting well in fall ball a little bit. He had a pretty good fall ball. Spring, he had a good. He had a double in the corner. And then Mark Uras was like, oh, that was a bad pitch. I'm like, God, Mark, you can't give anybody credit. But then but honestly, Workman looks a lot more comfortable at the plate. And even Altoona, because everybody couldn't hit against Altoona for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. It was struggling. And Workman put up some great at bat.
Especially Tuesday, Everybody, you pointed that out, that they were just swinging at every breaking ball.
Every slider. All Tuna had to do was just throw a slider low and away, and he was not going to catch up.
So Workman has always been confounding to us because, as you mentioned, like there's was a ton of swing and miss, but he would also put together like 10-pitch at-bats where he fouled off 8 pitches. You're like, what? There was enough there, and then when he made contact, it's just always hard. He just scalds the ball. And, yeah, this week, like, I couldn't notice any discernible difference other than the performance. And he also, I guess I would say that he does look more comfortable. He's not as jumpy at the dish. And yeah, I think we've got a chance to, I didn't scour the rest of the Eastern League this week, but it wouldn't shock me if Workman's the player of the week. What was he overall? He I don't know what he was overall, but he had two doubles, two triples, two homers, four walks, a stolen base. He wouldn't shock me if he's the Tigers' first player of the week in the minors. So that's a good sign. He's hitting over 300 now. You said the walks are up, the strikeouts are down. I looked today. Fuchs. All right. Dr. Hans Fuchs. Yeah,
thank you.
Fangraphs will give you swinging strike rate for players. You can't trust it in the low minors, I don't think.
It's a lot more accurate.
Complex league, but... Because I think they count everything as a swinging strike. So you see a guy like in the Dominican Summer League with a 60% swinging strike rate. But last year Workman was up at like 19%. And so far this year, it's down to 12%, which is a huge improvement. Now, it's only two series. We don't want to get carried away because there's the opposite side of that. And I'll mention that with Josh Crouch, who does not look great so far this year. His swinging strike rate was 11% last year, and it's 27% so far this year. He is not seeing the ball well, swinging and missing at just about everything. He had a couple doubles the other day. I'd like to believe that he's going to figure things out. It would be shocking to me for him to the jump from high A to double A would affect him this much, but he's definitely struggling right now early in the season. So you're hoping that can come together. And his defense was okay. I think a couple balls got by him, but that's the downside. But really, there weren't many other people tearing it up. I think Feliciano ended up having a pretty good week. The guy, the free agent they got from, what was he, in the Brewers system, I want to say?
Yeah, Brewers, yeah.
But
oh, go ahead.
No, I just say overall, there wasn't a ton to write home about from the Erie offense this week. And it was really impressive. After those first two games, it was impressive that they came back to split the series. Two walk-off wins.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, that about Workman, by the way, is that he is hitting the ball more pull side so far this early on. It's not as, for example, small sample size. He's at 53% pull side, and last year he was around 43. Again, more data to play with, but it's center where it's a difference. It's 23% last year. Right now it's down to 15. So it's little things like that that are coming up. And Chris, yeah, and thank you again for clearing up the pronunciation of the name. This is why Chris pronounces names and I don't. I freely admit that. But anyway, but yeah, I thought that Workman, some of the swing mechanic stuff he's been talking about, we talked about this last year, that he finally started listening to the Tigers, because before it was his father who worked with him on a swing. But again, we saw this where he was getting two golden sombreros. He was striking out too much. But towards the end of the season, he started listening to the Tigers, and Tigers said, look, here's what I'm going to tell. And he finally said, okay, I'm willing to change. And to me, his swing looks a lot more compact. I don't want to say like a shorter swing or anything like that, but in terms of a swing path through the zone, it is not as choppy, if you will.
Yeah. And we mentioned this before, but like, he's the guy, when he's hot, he scares the hell out of opposing managers. We saw it against Somerset in the playoffs last year, where they specifically brought in a lefty to switch to push Workman to his weaker right side, because he had already homered to dead center in that game. And that was a bomb too. It hit it onto like the batting cage building, which is like 20 feet behind center field. And he came through right-handed last year too. So when he's on, he's a dangerous, dangerous player. Now the defense, he's capable of playing shortstop, second base, third base. I think he's much better at third base than he is at shortstop. And it's not that he's not athletic enough to do it. He's got the range. He's got the arm. The consistency isn't always there. He tends to, it's one of those like classic things where he'll make the spectacular plays, and then just a regular play, he won't get the ball out of his glove, or he'll boot it a little bit, which is just the bar to play shortstop at the highest level is extremely high. You can't really have those types of mistakes. So I think he fits best as a third baseman, but he could play shortstop just fine for a few innings or a game or two. So that adds some value right there.
Yeah, especially for in terms of his range too. Like the way he can range all the way to the left, and we've seen that last year when he was at West Michigan. So I don't know. Like, it's long term, I could see him at third base, especially for a position of need of the Tigers. You can argue about Keith. You can argue about Pacheco, but it's a good thing to have a glutton of infield prospects, which is something the Tigers we've rarely seen this from this system ever. Not ever. I don't want to say. Never say never, but in the last 15, 20 years, we haven't seen something like this where the Tigers have plenty of people to go to. And speaking of which, we go to West Michigan.
One more thing about Erie. Witzel Perez came back this week.
Yes.
He got a couple hits, I think.
Yeah, he got a hit today, too.
Nothing crazy just yet, but it's just nice to see him back playing. We missed him by a couple days, but we saw him on the app. And like I said, it's his breakout last year was every bit as impressive, if not more so, than Parker Meadows. We just didn't celebrate it enough because of his injury. So I'm hoping he can get back on track, because that's another very interesting player in the Tiger system.
Yes. He had one of the best hard hitting ball rates in the system last year. And he's going to be staying at Erie for a little while too, because of what's going on in Toledo. So
I guess one more thing. There are a couple more arms in Erie. Ty Madden had a rough second start.
Yes.
You were clipping that together. He was getting squeezed a little bit, but he also didn't. He wasn't quite as sharp as he was in his debut. The velocity wasn't quite there, but he would still. He got three strikeouts and three walks. Only allowed one run, was it?
Yeah.
But 36 pitches. He really battled.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and there was one thing that somebody mentioned, and somebody was making comments on YouTube, like, why did he pull him after one inning? It's basically, he pitched 59 pitches. Why would he do 40? Essentially, he's going to go over that amount by the second inning, so they just decided to pull him. It was one of those things where somebody thought he was injured, but at the same time, his slider, his curve, essentially his curve didn't really, it was, a lot of the stuff was just hanging, comparatively speaking, in Akron. Akron, everything was just dipping down. Like, the fastball had some good ride life, but I thought in the top of the zone, I thought he did pretty well. But yeah, you know, the ump didn't do him any favors either, let's be fair.
Yeah, and if you want to look at the silver line too, that was another start where he was missing bats with his fastball in the zone.
Yes.
Which was a big concern last year. So yeah, it was a hiccup. We'll see what happens in his next outing. You touched on Brant Herder earlier. I still think he's a big leaguer. I compared him to Brian Flynn, the former Tigers prospect who was traded to the Marlins, I believe.
Marlins.
Along with Jacob Turner and Rob Brantley, I want to say. But who was a big leaguer for a while. Brant Herder is not, he's not going to be a mid-rotation starter or an ace or anything like that. But I think he throws enough strikes and he's got some interesting pitches. And Dylan Smith has just had his first outing was really rough. He had a hard time throwing strikes. And his second outing wasn't all that much better. So we need to see some more from him. But that's the one. He's just getting to Double A now, so that's the missing link of that rotation there right now. We're hoping that, because he was a third-round pick, and you'd like to see him pick it up to join Madden and Flores and Herder and Sawyer Gibson Law. It's a talented rotation. They would be nice to see him, you know, really pitch well soon.
Yeah, a lot of people are still on the boat about him because he's a guy who has that pinpoint location. But I don't know. I still think that there's some to work with there. So let's start with West Michigan. And before we get to the games that you saw, we'll start with early in the week. As the Luckinuts have a pretty good, the A's, in terms of prospects, the A's high A and low A is pretty good. The team itself is terrible. There was a story today about how there's been broadcasters who can't go in the opposing booth because there's a possum living there.
No.
I swear to God.
The Simpsons episode where Homer is the monorail conductor.
Monorail, yeah, where he has the open up. I'm dead serious. Go on Twitter right now.
I call
and look
the big
it up.
One bitey.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll search for it here in a second. But yeah, but the A's have some pretty good prospects among their system. And the guys of the Muncy, of course, is still there, which is still wreaking havoc. They had an arm out there too today. Or yesterday, that guy, I forgot the guy's name right now, but the Fernandez was the one that I was interested in. Christian Fernandez, who looked really good on Wednesday, went out there 4 innings, 6 strikeouts, and he just looked dominant.
Yeah, I didn't really do a whole bunch of reading up on their prospects before, and there were some good arms. The game I went to, the first game, it was Waters, was their former fourth round pick. What's his first name? I'm looking. He's out of West Virginia, but he was sitting 94, 96 with a decent breaking ball. But he's the one that Campos hit the opposite field home run off of. And that kind of shook him a little bit. He couldn't throw strikes after that, but it was a good arm. And then the next guy they brought in was not so good. He was a lefty, like minor league free agent sign, who was 86 miles an hour and he walked everybody. But then they brought in two more guys who were sitting in the mid-90s. It was impressive. They've got some arms in that system, and that was one of the guys' name was Baum. I think he's a second rounder from North Carolina. And then they brought in a kid named Josh Breault, Breault, who was the 20th round pick from Oregon, but he had a good arm, and there's the possum. That's amazing.
It's been living inside its walls.
The Virginia opossum, good for it. Yeah. So in any event, yeah, Lansing's got some good pitchers, and then there's Jorge Juan, who we can mention. We'll bring up in a little bit, and because Jesse, first of all, we do this every time, but we really do need to give a shout out to Greg and everybody in Erie for their hospitality. They're great to us. when we go out there, and then they help us out and they give us whatever we need, and they're trying to give us more than we need. They're all like, hey, come get some food vouchers. So we're like, yeah. But also, Jesse
actually got yelled at by Greg about it. Dude, Roger, what are you doing? I'm eating. I had food vouchers for you. You didn't tell me.
We don't want to bother these guys. That's one thing that I don't think people understand is how hard these guys work. I was with Jesse, the Lugnuts announcer, last night, just hanging out after the game, and he's pulling together all the clips, the highlight clips. He's written the game recap. He's broadcast most of the game. They do this every day, and it was his birthday. And Dan was there. These guys are just super professionals, awesome dudes. Dan let me come on and broadcast two innings with my nonsense,
do a
color commentary. Just really awesome guys. We're really fortunate. They're terrific announcers. We're fortunate to have these guys in our state and in the Tiger system. So thank you to them again for all the hospitality in both Erie and in Lansing and in West Michigan when we're out there. And Nate, too.
Yeah, Nate, too. And Nate's fantastic. But yeah, Greg, but him, Lena, Jason, the entire crew over there with UEC Wolves has done.
Sam, the new, number two announcer.
Yeah, number two. Sam was really cool. Jason, or not, there's another guy, the bearded gentleman that I was talking to on Wednesday night, or Tuesday night, rather, a little bit, and I'm drawing his name at the moment. But
yeah, they're just nice people. Remember, we go to Shirley's every time, and they're having a good time. Everybody's super nice.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is wrong with you people? Why are you so nice?
Yeah, I was trying to buy a shirt from Shirley's in Erie, and they didn't have any shirts available. But
we had ladies V-neck medium.
Yeah, and I was like, nah, I would not look at a ladies V-neck. I'd probably tear that thing apart. But no, it's been great. And which is why, like, Greg will get honest about, you guys should promote your Patreon and all that. We don't like asking people for money. We try not to, but the stuff always does cost stuff. But we appreciate all the donations. We appreciate everybody. So don't get me wrong. We're beyond grateful for it. It's cool to do this.
The Motel 6 we stay at Erie is pretty spectacular for how cheap it is.
Yeah, the only thing about that Motel 6 I didn't this time is that room didn't have enough hot water. I don't know about you, but the hot water wasn't really...
The faucet was insane. You turned it on.
It was like...
Yeah, it was the Larry David when he had the overpowering pee stream.
Yeah.
But in any event, back to baseball.
Back to baseball.
So, yeah, West Michigan travels to Lansing. We like to go out there. It's the closest stadium to me. So I went out there. We were in Erie for Tuesday, Wednesday, so we couldn't go for those games. And then I went Friday and Saturday. The Friday game, we got to see Thursday, Pacheco hit his first home run of the week, right?
Yeah.
Friday, I got to see another Pacheco home run. I got to see a Campos home run. I got to see 14 runs overall. That offense is really fun right now. And it's part of it is because just the way it worked out, I think the signing of Matt Witherspoon meant that Ben Malgeri had to stay in West Michigan. Just the way it worked out. And he's proving that he doesn't belong there, right? He's got some tools. He's got bat speed. He's a good defender in the outfield. The power is showing up, which we didn't really see last year. So, yeah, he doesn't belong in West Michigan. Now, he may struggle in play because I do think there's some swing and miss with breaking balls. What happened?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Greg say at one point in one version of the Erie roster, he was on that version, right?
He may have. I don't
know.
But yeah, it's entirely possible. They played around with rosters beforehand, too. And we talked about it before. The Tigers just seem to keep more of their minor league free agents this year than we expected. So that you ended up with Papirski and Knapp and Ibanez and Palacios and all these guys were hanging around. So anyway, Malgeri's just been tearing it up. He's been awesome. He's been a force in that lineup. We talked about Campos and Pacheco earlier. Pacheco remains very impressive. He did have he had two throwing errors on Friday night, which was a bummer. Now, one of them, there's a unique feature about Jackson Field there in Lansing. The sun, when it's going down, is directly in the first baseman's face.
It sucks.
And that affects the way that the rest of the infielders try to throw the ball to the first baseman. You could see them trying to basically throw bocce ball grounders over there to try to whatever they could help. And so the first one, I think, was a result of that. Second one was he was trying to make a throw to second base and just pulled Young off the bag a little bit. It wasn't Young, actually. It was Mendoza.
I feel like there's always a throwing error, at least at first base, almost every time we're there, almost.
Yeah, absolutely. There were a couple in that series. But, yeah, the power is lit. He hit three home runs, all of them to dead center field, I think.
Yeah.
It's just and Jesse, the Lansing announcer, was like, this dude's a superstar because five of his six home runs in high A have happened in Lansing. So he loves hitting there. But, yeah, and to that point, the Jorge Juan, the 6'9" pitcher who closed out the game last night, he, I think he pitched the last two innings, was just killing
everybody.
killing everybody with his breaking ball to the point where Jesse put together a little like a sizzle reel of his breaking ball striking out Austin Murr. And I think he got Malgeri and he got everybody else. Pacheco fouled it off and then sat on that thing and hit a laser to right center that Caden Trinkle, who was super annoying. He is a good ball player. I think Jesse said he was a ninth rounder. He's their leadoff man. He's on base constantly. He's a center fielder, but he was playing right and made a diving catch to end the game. But yeah, the Pacheco breakout is real, I think. It's coming. Despite that low batting average, as I said, his batting average on balls in play is 150 right now, which is absurdly low. About 100 points lower than you'll ever see. So he'll be fine. And yeah, he'll be in Double A this year if he stays healthy.
Yeah.
The power's legit. The defense is solid. He's a good ball player.
I love his swing. His swing is so quick through the zone.
That's what Jesse was like. Who swing? He was like, he's got the same swing as somebody else I know, and he can't figure it out. And so if anybody has doesn't want to suggest whose swing it reminds them of, go ahead and share it with us because it's a beautiful swing. So yeah, it was really fun to see him. Now he got today off. Yesterday, Young and Malgeri got the day off, but Campos was there. And Campos was doing his thing. We talked about it earlier. Just really impressed with that young man. Still, he's 19 until June, I think.
Yeah.
He's another guy that just looks mature and a really good player. And then everybody else on the team is old. But Danny Cerretti has looked solid.
High A at all. None.
What's that?
Danny Cerretti's...
That's another one who he probably should be in Erie. He hit a home run to dead center today as a right-handed hitter. You normally see him as a lefty because he's a switch hitter. But yeah, he and Jace Young are super annoying for opposing pitchers. Is this the Campos home run?
Yeah, that's this is what I like. I just wanted to point out that first and foremost, it was a good job with the video, Chris, but secondly, it was the swing, his approach here at the plate. He takes what's given to him. Nice little in and out stroke right there, and just almost like he perfectly plants it right there in shallow right center. And that was one of the most impressive at bats. Now, don't get me wrong, the power's great and all that, but this right there, that's what's going to get you in the major leagues.
Absolutely. And I think he would prefer to, based on just his batted ball profile so far, I think he prefers to drive the ball there to the gap, center gap. His home run that way, he did pull a double later. But yeah, he's a guy who's going to take a fastball, and we asked him on media day, "What about your swing?" And he basically said, "My job is to hit the ball hard." And man, does he! He really hits the ball hard. That was, I don't know if it was that pitch or later, but there was 95 mile an hour fastball, and he just served it out to right, a line drive. So, yeah, really impressed with that kid. Really impressed with Pacheco. Cerretti has been really, I wouldn't say impressive, but he's doing exactly what I expected. He works long at bats. He's been solid in the field. He makes some pretty spectacular plays at times, but I don't know if he's a shortstop at the highest level, but he's certainly a shortstop in the minors through Double A, Triple A. And then there's Jace Young, who looks a lot like he did last year. Now, he worked four walks in the first game I was there, and he had a double. I still don't see the power from him. He'll hit the ball hard, but it just doesn't travel. So I don't know if we're just waiting for that to pop up or if that's not going to be a part of his game in pro ball, but it needs to be.
Because the reason why is Zach Nato, who, this is a guy that, for anybody who's listening to the podcast long enough to know, I was pretty adamant the Tigers should have gotten Zach Nato when he was there. I said it at the draft show. I said it beforehand. I was a big fan, and I knew he was going to get punished because of the conference he played in. It was Campbell. And guess what? The Angels called him up. He was raking last year immediately after the draft. And I thought, again, it might sound like I'm being a told you so kind of moment. I'm not. Young has looked a lot better at the plate this year, but Zach Nato is, I think, it's the second player from the last year's draft class already
first,
in the league.
It's the first.
I
think that's probably way too quick. The Angels aren't the world's best organization. No. I think they didn't give themselves a shortstop this year, so they're working. Who are they? Urshela? They had him playing shortstop.
Yeah, they cheaped out on shortstops, which means no.
The first time ever. So I think it's too quick. I don't think he has a hit yet in his first two games, but he's a talented kid, and I thought that I have nothing against Jace Young.
And me neither.
But he's still fastballs, like good fastballs, 94, 95. He seems to have a little bit of trouble with. And he said that was something he wanted to work on. And again, first couple of weeks of his first full year, we're going to give him plenty of time. So he doesn't, comparatively speaking, he doesn't stand out to when you got Pacheco and Campos there.
So another person that stood out, and this is Stan's boy, and this is my boy too, actually, is Carlos Pena, who's a lefty who last year I saw him pitch some bullpen down in Lakeland when I was down there, and he seemed like he was like, for him, again, this is a guy who didn't start pitching until a few years ago. So keep in mind that when you look at his age, you don't kind of ignore that because he was, the Tigers signed him in 2019. And at that point, he was a little older when they signed him. And so he comes into West Michigan this year. Last year, he hit all four levels last year. I mean, it was, yeah, granted, not that long at Erie nor at Toledo. Yeah,
I think he got one out at Erie.
Yeah, I got one out in Erie. He was there. Yeah, I think it was around the time in September. I think it was there. It was September he got up there. But so far in two games this season, he's not allowed to run. He's allowed just six hits. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Yeah, six hits in seven innings of work, one walk, just one walk and 11 strikeouts. He's not overpowering you, but he can just, his location. And I think, Chris, I don't know, the reason why I'm getting curious to see what, when we put the gun on him is if he has a high spin, because I think he does. It looks like a guy who can locate with that high spin very well.
We can actually go back and look, because he did pitch in Lakeland last year, so we can go back and look. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to go get his start after the show. I'll pull it and I'll cut it up and I'll put it up on the YouTube channel tomorrow. Just because, yeah, I think people want to see it. I have not seen him in person. So yeah, that's definitely a guy that I want to, he's 24, but like you said, he's not terribly experienced. So you want to throw that out. And lefties are always interesting. So
I'm always fascinated by lefties. Yeah. He generated 11 swings and misses on a start on Thursday. So that's impressive. Again, Lansing has a couple dudes in there, and Stan is absolutely right. His throwing motion is very clean, it's very compact, but also it's the way he can locate his, like, pinpoint location, and he has to because he's not very big. He's 5'11", maybe in terms of, like, just you see him out there. He doesn't. Last year, I remember when I was in Lakeland, I was throwing bullpen. Originally, before he was coming across the bullpen, I thought it was a kid.
Oh, that's right.
He put a jersey, I'm like, well, there's a kid in here, and it just because unexpected. And then he got some time in the Winter League this year in Dominican Republic and was able to pitch. And that, I think, really helped him because this is a guy who was looking for more experience. And he said through an interview in Spanish, he was talking about how much he was looking forward to doing this, the Winter League action, so it could help him for the majors. And I think he pitched maybe three or four innings. I can't remember. He made a brief appearance, but either way, Pena is probably the shining star out of the rotation this year. Yeah, it's also a rough start in West Michigan.
Yeah, so I caught Kyler Montero and Garrett Berhan making starts. And Montero, it's a lot like we saw last year, where it's impressive stuff. He was 92, 95. He touched 96 a couple times. He threw at least two breaking balls for me that topped 3,000 RPMs.
Oh, yeah, we have proof.
Which is a first for me. I haven't had the gun a ton, but that's we've known about that for a few years back. I think Fangraphs first put it up that he could spin it really well. But yeah, he also gave up a home run on a breaking ball. He's got, and also I think he got charged with four runs, but I don't understand how, because I think he was out there for one of those innings where Pacheco made. I thought there were more errors. I don't know exactly what happened. I have to go back and look, but I didn't think it was his fault. The defense wasn't helping him out. But it's a firm fastball, doesn't necessarily miss a ton of bats, but he's got a changeup. He's got a couple breaking balls. It's a full starter's arsenal. He's just another guy who doesn't quite have the command you need to get outs consistently. He's only 22, so I think they're going to continue developing him as a starter as well. But I'd be really curious to see what he can do out of the bullpen. If he's up to 97, 98 with that hook, I think you've got something there. So I think he's a big leaguer down the road, just probably not as a starter. And who else did I get in that game? They brought in, after him, they brought in, who was it? I'm trying to think. My apologies. I saw eight pitchers in 2 days, so I got to remember which one it was. But I've got all my notes right here. They're, how do I describe? Oh, Eric Pinellas, who's a guy that I've always heard about. He throws really hard. He was up to 97, 98. Not a ton of command, which is not entirely surprising. But he had a decent slider as well. And then after him was Zach Hess, who was interesting for me to see because Zach Hess was, I want to say, eighth round pick in 2019 out of LSU, was going to be a fast-moving reliever, we saw him a couple times out in West Michigan 2-3 years ago. And then he blew his arm out. So he's just coming back now. And he pitched well, but his fastball was 90 to 91. He hit 92 twice for me in the one inning of work. Slider still looked good. Spin rates were good on all his pitches. Fastball was 24 to 2,500. Slider was 2,800. Threw a couple changeups in like 1,400 range, which is what you want. So everything looked good. The velocity just wasn't there. And you always worry about that with Tommy John guys. Every now and then there's that guy who just never gets the fastball back for whatever reason. I don't want to say Zach Hess is that guy yet. He's only pitched a few times since coming back, so I want to give him time over the course of the year. But remember, we had a bet with his agent, right? That he was going to hit 100?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
He came on the show several years ago, and we saw him. He was there in the COVID camp or whatever, the summer camp they had, and looking like a nightmare on the mound, all arms and legs everywhere, throwing fastballs up at people's eyes, and they were like 97, 98. He's toned down the delivery. It's still... still a reliever's delivery. There's still some head whack there. He's toned it down, so maybe that's why the fastball isn't there. But we also remember Michael Fulmer. It seemed like his fastball was gone for a little bit until he finally was comfortable letting loose. So I'm going to give Zach Hess some time for the rest of the year to get that fastball back. So that was him. I saw Tortosa, who he got hit pretty hard. But he's been in the organization for 8 years now. You saw him down in Lakeland. You see why. He's a lefty. He's 6'4". 225 pounds. It's a free and easy 94, 95, 96 from the left side. He'll show you a plus slider. We saw one when we were driving home from Erie that we clipped because it was a bases loaded and he just threw this nasty back foot slider to Lazarito, I think. But yeah, he got hit hard in that game. Then I saw Blake Holub and Tyler Madison, both guys kind of interesting fastballs right over the top. Madison gave up a home run to Max Muncy. That I was impressed with. It was an opposite field home run. And that's, I think, the first run Madison's given up all year. So Muncy's legit. And then, yeah, on Saturday, I saw Garrett Burhan, who's a guy I wanted to see. We hadn't seen him much. He was the 10th round pick in 2021 out of Ohio State. And he was good in the first inning. He was another guy who was 91 to 95, showed a mid-80s slider. And I'm sorry, it was like an 83-mile-an-hour slider in the mid-80s changeup, which is his best pitch. Got some swings and misses, but second inning, the fastball, it's got pedestrian spin rates. It's 2250 or whatever. And they were smacking around to the point where he basically stopped throwing it and started throwing nothing but changeups, which worked for him for about two batters. And then they just realized he was not nothing but changeups, but it was like 60% changeups. And they just stopped swinging at him and so let him go below the zone. And then he got pulled. So he's another guy that I think probably fits best in the bullpen down the road. I think he might be up to 97 or so out of the bullpen with that changeup could work. The breaking ball's like a 40, 45 at best. I don't know. Yeah, the starting rotation is a little bit light right now, but you got to give these guys a little more time to develop. And then when I was talking earlier about Reese Olson, Chavez Fernander came in after Garrett Burhan, and he's throwing 95, 96, and he's got no hope of getting to the big leagues. That's where we are in minor leagues now, where it's because it's a good fastball, but it doesn't have great shape. Guys can see it. They hit it. And his breaking ball is like a 30 grade pitch.
Yeah. I was going to say I think it's a slider, like a short slider.
Yeah.
It doesn't do much. Yeah.
And it sucks because, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you throwing that hard, you got a chance no matter what, but it's just, it's a different game now. I was there for 2 days. I saw six different guys hit 96 or higher. It's a different ball game. So that's my rundown from Lansing. Sorry if that was a little long-winded there, but
I saw
from the pitchers.
Yeah, that's good, man. And it was something that, especially, I wanted to go out there, and I thought I was going to go to the Tigers game, but honestly, just between this week, just kicked my butt. Yeah. Period. But yeah, that being said, though, it was as far as what some of the arms they have down in West Michigan. One of the things that I did see, I'm trying to find it, was that slider that Christian tore up. Through that was like that's just insane. Tortosa through that was just
I'll find
beautiful.
It
yeah, we can find that. But no, but overall, I think that there's going to be. I don't think there's going to be as much in terms of hitter wise. We'll probably see a lot of movement back and forth between Erie and West Michigan. But for now, I don't see the arms up there. I think that there's a reason why Erie has kind of like a veteran feel to it. The same arms we saw there one of the arms that we did see, I forgot to mention, was Adam Wolf, who struggled. Mm-hmm. And he was at 90. He's not a hard thrower anyways, but it seemed like he was nibbling quite a bit. And he was having a hard time with command. But again, early in the season, it's the same situation. And then today, Gabe Sequeira looked like he got hurt, Chris.
Yeah, he was raining. I don't know what they were doing today. Sorry.
Same thing at Comerica Park, apparently.
Yeah, they played today. They played in the rain. They had a delay. They came back. I don't know if you wanted to click on that link or if I put it in the wrong spot. Sorry. But that's the part of the problem with Tortosa is it's Christhian, Christhian. But yeah, Sequeira came out and it was raining and he gave up a couple hits, I think, and then left with something wasn't feeling right. I didn't see exactly what happened, but he left and then they brought in Jack Anderson. His first pitch, he slipped off the rubber because it was wet as hell and it was a balk. So yeah, it didn't feel, I don't know who decides that. I think it's normally the umpire crew chief or whatever.
It might not be.
So here's the pitch from Tortosa, if you can watch. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's just, he can't do it consistently, which is the name of the game. But it's such an interesting arm to see. This is a bases loaded, 2-2 count, just buries the slider behind Armenteros. Now Armenteros strikes out a lot, but still.
Yeah, but good backdoor action on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got some interesting bullpen arms down there. The starters.
We'll see.
Jack O'Loughlin he's got a 45 curveball and a 40 fastball. He was okay today. I don't know. It is odd that there's not a ton of starting pitching depth down in the low minors this year.
Yeah, and that leads us to Lakeland, which was there's one of the things that I kept hearing about was in terms of like how bad was not bad rather. Lakeland kind of in terms of what they're going to stand at. There's not much. I know people like earlier mentioned Christian Santana. I think Christian Santana is a legitimate prospect. I still think he is. He's starting in Lakeland for reasons that are simple. I think there's a backlog of infielders right now with Tigers, but there's some batted ball data that we're going to be, by the way, as of tomorrow, we're going to be putting some of that stuff behind the paywall over our Patreon. So some of the bad ball data that Chris has been working on, Jerry's been working on, or astronaut, because he's a damn astronaut. We're going to be putting that there. But it's looking at some of the stuff from Lakeland in terms of starter-wise. I think what they're trying to do right now is figure out what they have, because it's a collection of arms that are, some of them are repeating, some of them are just came up from rookie ball last year. And yesterday, with my friend Sherry and her husband go, they're Lakeland Flying Tigers season ticket holders. So we got some video, thanks to her, out yesterday, but it wasn't pretty. Ulises Campos, final line, one and two-thirds innings, 12 hits, 12 runs, or excuse me, 12 hits, 10 earned runs, one strikeout. He allowed two home runs. He pitched, in terms of, you were looking at his rate, 46 pitches, and he got lit up pretty hard. Same thing with Rodriguez, not too bad, but Aaron Haas came in and he pitched three scoreless innings and got five strikeouts. Again, I think that's a guy who I think we'll see at West Michigan sometime soon. He's a guy who could spin the ball pretty well.
He made it to West Michigan last year. Yeah, that was just another one where some of these early season assignments were just odd because guys had already gone up to a level. Now, the Campos thing is that to me, they really let him wear it. So that to me struck me as another instance of them just having a guy work on something. Because he threw a ton of fastballs and got zero, like maybe one swing and miss on him. And he's a future reliever anyway, I think, because of his build and his delivery. But he throws hard and he's got a decent slider and a decent changeup. So I don't know if they were just like, hey, throw as many fastballs in the zone as you can and results be damned. Or if he just, it sounded like they were hitting him like it was like that cartoon where they're just stepping up and hitting and the next guy steps up and hits it.
Oh, like Bugs Bunny?
Yeah. Because like you said, it was like 46 pitches and he gave up like, what, 10, 12 hits? So
yeah, some of that video I got was just like, you heard the bat just like loud contact.
Yeah, so he had to wear that one a little bit. But yeah, the big arm down there remains Troy Melton, who was their fourth round pick last year. And he didn't have a particularly strong outing either, but he's another guy he's like sitting 97, will touch 98 multiple times in a game. It's a big fastball. Does he have anything else? I don't really think so yet. He's working on that. That's what they're trying to figure out. So that's a guy I'm eager to see later in the year if he does eventually make his way up to West Michigan, because it's a big arm and something to work with there. The early results haven't been great. There's Edgardo Ibarra, who's a lefty, I believe, that maybe is the next Carlos Pena. I don't know. We don't know much about him, really. Yeah. I'm trying to think who else they have pitching. Chris Williams, another lefty they drafted last year. You had a little bit of video from him, didn't you? Or no, was it just looking at his stat line? But yeah, the rotation down there is there's not a lot of sizzle there either. Carlos Marcano.
No.
Marcano is an interesting guy. We talked about him last year. He's still only 19, I think. He was very young last year, pitching mostly out of the bullpen. He's got three legitimate pitches, but the fastball I don't think does a ton. It's like 91, 93. He'll hit 95. But it's a guy that young, you might see him continue to improve. Trevin Michael is a guy in the bullpen down there who doesn't belong in the bullpen down there.
No, he's too old to be in there. He's probably he's a guy who can. I'm not saying that old. I'm sorry, that sounded really derogatory. Well, but
They're not. Also, it's not a challenge for him. He's pitched 3.2 innings, one hit, zero walks, nine strikeouts.
Yeah, he should be at West Michigan. I think he probably will be at West Michigan at some point. And you know what's funny, by the way, speaking of a bat should be at West Michigan, who we didn't see at first, Lazaro Benitez is back with Lakeland. I was pumped. That was a guy who I was like, wait, where'd he go? And he suddenly appeared this week. But Chris, there was a bat. Was it Asano Reyes that was hitting the ball really hard that you had?
Adenso Reyes hit a ball 112 miles an hour.
Yes, so it was.
Earlier
in the
season. He also has one that's 108. Yeah, he's been hitting the hell out of the ball.
He's been playing primarily a time at third base, too.
Yeah, it's early, and it's still six strikeouts to one walk last week.
Yeah.
But a double, a triple, he's hitting the ball hard. You know, he and Jose De La Cruz were kind of the hey, maybe these are the guys that break the international bat streak, and it's been slow going for them. De La Cruz is hurt. But Reyes certainly hits the ball hard, and that's not a bad place to start from. You mentioned Carlos Pellegrin was crushing the ball, and then he went on the IL, so they brought in Benitez. So there are some mildly intriguing bats down there. We haven't seen a whole lot from Peyton Graham yet.
Yeah, same thing I know Christian Santana's off to a bad start. Four walks and seven strikeouts is good, but he's hitting 111. And the power is something that he's been trying to develop more on a consistent basis. It's not there. But Manuel Sequeira, again, I'm a believer in Manuel Sequeira. Everybody, there's some people out there who are not, but I believe in him.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing with him is that he's not a guy who walks. And he's strikes out a fair amount, not a ton, but it's just an old school Tigers swing at everything. And because he's got good bat to ball skills, it's working right now, but you worry about it at higher levels. But yeah, he makes hard contact. He's a little workman-esque. I think we've talked about him before. Yeah. Santana, I wouldn't discount maybe a slight disappointment that he's back in Lakeland. You talked to him before. He said he wasn't expecting anything specific, but you got to think if you spend 1 year in low A and he was okay, right? He only hit 215, which I think is we don't preach about batting average much in the modern baseball era, but it matters in the minor leagues to a certain extent. If you're not hitting above 250 or so, you're going to struggle when you move up to the next level. That's just the way it is. And the walks are great, but he needs to just make more consistent contact and more line drives. He's the opposite of Campos. There was too much fly ball, not enough line drive. You don't want to hit a ton of ground balls, but he just needs to bring it down a little bit. I think today, I want to say he hit a 380-foot sack fly. He's been doing that fairly frequently, some deep contact, but just not necessarily to the right part of the field to get the home runs. But without seeing him, I can't really say, but he's another guy I suspect will be okay. A month from now, we won't be worried too much.
Yeah, and there's a lot of cases with even a guy like, for example, like Andrew Jenkins, who's been off to a pretty good start. A lot of this, again, higher level, suppressing some people down. I think Andrew Jenkins, the signing of Paulson, but then again, he has Jenkins. The thing about Jenkins is he struck out 10 times already.
And that's his issue too. He's a guy who could do some things with the bat, but he swings and misses a fair amount.
Yeah.
And Navigado's down there rehabbing right now. He'll be up in Double-A soon.
Yeah. And overall, Lakeland is 4-5, and against Binghamton, they have some decent arms. I know they have, I think the Marauders have a pretty couple good arms there too.
Yeah, they certainly did last year.
They had that high schooler out of New Jersey that was pretty good.
Solometto. They had Bubba, whatever his name is, the two way player who was pitching in, playing outfield. He was committed to Clemson. I'm blanking on his name, but yeah, the Pirates have a very deep system now because they've sucked for a long time and made a lot of trades. And not that guarantees you a very deep system, but they've done a good job of stockpiling some interesting players. Yeah, Bradenton's the annoying team like Altoona. But yeah, I don't know. Lakeland right now isn't, until Peyton Graham kind of heats up and Santana heats up, it's not a super sexy roster. We've seen Seth Stevenson, who was 7th round pick last year, 6th round, I don't remember exactly, outfielder out of Tennessee. He reminds me of Jacob Robson.
Yeah.
Maybe like a right-handed version.
Classic.
Where
he's going to put up some numbers. He's going to steal some bases, but I don't know if he's a everyday big leaguer. And then Dom Johnson is similar. He's a speedy outfielder who he had an inside the park home run the other day. But yeah, so it's just not a terribly enthralling system or team at the moment, but it's early. Some guys I'm sure will emerge as they do every year, and we'll keep you guys updated on that.
Yeah. And I think hopefully they're on TV sometime soon too, because the clips we've been getting. They are going up. Okay. Thankfully.
I think 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been, again, talk. It's all speculation, irresponsible speculation, that maybe Lakeland actually starts broadcasting games next year, which would be ideal. Because when the thing is that I was talking to the season ticket holder, Sherry and her husband, is that down in July, it's hot. It's hot. And no one shows up because it's that hot. And it's just unbearable because there's spots. It's like if you're sitting in the shade, but if you're sitting down right behind the third baseline or the first baseline, it's getting roasted. Like last year, I made a mistake of wearing, I should have worn a t-shirt. I wore a polo and a shirt trying to look all presentable. And yeah, this year, it's going to be different.
My bad. This week, they're at St. Lucie this week.
Oh, sweet. All right.
They will be on TV. And then let's see. And then at Bradenton the second week of May. So that will be on TV as well. So a couple times over the next month, we'll get a chance to get you guys some video footage of the Lakeland Flying Tigers.
Some footage. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing some of going down there soon. I'm going down there hopefully in July. Depends on flights and how everything, all that stuff goes. But anyway, enough about that. We thank everybody for the super chats today. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much for participating in the chats. Honestly, thank you.
Did we get to every question?
Did we get to every question? Let me see.
I think we probably did, but just in case somebody didn't get one answered, go ahead and tell us now so we can get it before we leave.
I'll make sure to say Hans' name. Dr. Hans.
Fuchs.
Fuchs. Fuchs. Fuchs. Dr. Hans Fuchs. Thank you again for, the $2 stand. Blood, everybody in here. Thank you, Henry, again. Much appreciated, Sean. And yeah, I think we got to all the questions. Let's see here. Oh, it was a... Was it Harris picked up? I'm trying to think of got everybody.
Harris picked up. Yeah.
Yeah, we got everybody. Again, tune in next week. Like I said, every Sunday night at 9 o'clock here at the Tiger Mindly Report channel. You can find us doing a weekly recap. There's going to be an article coming out on TigersMLReport.com tomorrow. I'm going to be doing a recap, written recap, and highlighting Gage Workman's performance. And also, you can find some stuff over at MotorCityBengals.com. But mainly, it's going to be, like I said, all 25 prospects are on our board. Have scouting reports. And so if you go to TigersMLReport.com and go to our top 25 list, the reports are right there. But again, just because there's the only one right now we have that's not protected is Roberto Campos. So if you are interested in doing this, because we put a lot of work in these reports, and I know that people are like, well, we should access it. Anyway,
if you pay attention, we probably give most of it away anyway in the podcast and other articles. But no, it was funny. You showed me that one, and I was like, you wrote that 2 months ago, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, huh, all right, that's wrong now.
We've got to change it anyways, because I know that Wentz is going to not be a prospect soon. Mason Englert's not going to be a prospect soon. Yeah. So there's going to be a couple people that are going to be off the list, and we got to start thinking about
candidates have graduated too.
Yeah. So, for example, Alex, Jeremy, Stan, if you guys have somebody that you'd like to see on the list, I think we have a very intelligent community of fans here. who pay attention to the minor leagues. There's definitely a lot of candidates that come in mind right now. Another guy that we even consider, Ben Malgeri, he's probably going to be one of those that we're just going to have to put on the list because Elvis Alvarado, by the way, is injured. He's on the IL. Yeah. But yeah, Roberto Campos. Yeah, Connor's coming in with Roberto Campos stuff. Yeah, that's chef's kiss right there.
I think if we were to, and maybe we'll do that in another month or so, we'll do a re-rank or something like that. I don't know. We tend to wait until after the draft, but maybe we can do it after we've seen everybody. Maybe after the second time that Lakeland is on MILB TV, we'll have seen enough from every team to maybe do a re-rank. Oh, Stan, what list? Yeah, our top 25 prospect list.
25 list.
Which is a preseason list, and as we like to say, these are just snapshots in time, and things change very quickly. And actually, we made that list, I think, November or December.
We made that list in December. So here, by the way, and this is, I should preference this that I forget that sometimes not everybody knows how we keep track of these things. So that's my apologies there. So this is our top 25 list. Keep in mind, we had Cole Keith number one since July of last year. That's how confident.
You did.
I did. I'm not gonna.
Maybe we did meet as a group, but yeah, I still had him a little bit lower, and then it was funny. Like he wasn't even playing, and eventually he just made it. You're right.
Yeah.
But we've talked about it before. If we did it now, I'm not so sure Parker Meadows isn't the number one prospect in the system. Although the last week gives you a slight pause, but we have Pacheco higher than just about anybody, maybe other than Trevor. I want to say.
Yeah, Trevor's really high on Pacheco. He's also we differ about Reese Olson a little bit. That's our biggest differences. And he said something about time man's fastball today or last week, but beg to differ on that a little bit. I like that though. It creates debate.
Listen, yeah, if we agree on everything, there's no point.
And Stan, trust me, I'm a little miffed about that too. But I think it was something that it was funny. Who's a Texan with this about in terms of Pacheco should be in our top five. That's gonna.
What do we have him seven?
Yeah, we have him seven for right now.
You can.
Oh, I was talking to Ghost Mav Steve in our Discord today, and he said something that makes a lot of sense. A lot of the national guys are spread thin. I know Keith Law mails it in. That's true. He does mail it in, like literally mails it in. But he has his guy. He has his sources and everything. So a lot of the national guys pay attention to systems like the Orioles, the Braves, ones that traditionally produce a lot of talent. And let's be fair here, folks. If we're being objective, the Tigers system has not produced much in the last 25, 30 years. It's only been like a handful of prospects. You're talking Ramon Santiago, Omar Infante, Nick Castellanos, in terms of positional player talent. So I can understand why people might be skeptical about that. Be that as it may, I think this is again, I said this last night on Twitter and I'll say it again. The Tigers have two or three infield prospects at three different levels that are legit, which is something I've never seen. I've never seen that before in any time. Like in the 90s, it was basically it was like Debbie Cruz was actually a Rule 5 pick. So technically that didn't even count, but they didn't really have anybody. Mm-hmm. They came up. Tony Clark had to wait until Cecil Fielder was traded. And Jump Shot Jordan, yes, we'll be live during the MLB draft this year. We will be definitely live. I want to do it somewhere. I want to go to a bar and do it. That'd be cool. Or some stuff wants to do it.
We can look into that. Yeah, there's the Pound out here in Brighton.
The Pound?
The Pound.
Like the dog pound, because the Brighton Bulldog.
Maybe they would go for that. But the Tigers have some guys. We've seen that the major leagues is a whole different animal. We've seen that. We've seen with the way that Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson have battled to be even average. It's hard up there. So we're not saying that these guys are all stars, but they have players in the system that they didn't really have before. Jeff Larris.
Yeah,
Jeff Larris was the stillest batting stance of all time.
He was like,
he thought he was up there thinking that T-Rex was pitching. And
you don't move, then he's not going to see it.
That's
but
a good one.
Just most of the guys at the top of the list, at least the hitters, are fairly patient with power and some hitting ability. And it's just, we haven't seen a ton of that in a long time, which sounds bad. But so I think, the way that national writers look at it, it's not, there's not a lot of like sexy gold glove level up the middle guys. It's mostly corner bat and in Parker Meadows, who people are skeptical of because he had 2+ years of not being very good. So I don't necessarily blame them for ranking the Tigers low. I still think ranking them 30th was absurd when you've got other systems out there that are not good at all. but whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just opinions, and it's designed to get people talking. We stand by our top 25, even though there's some that I don't even agree with. But we go out and see these guys, and we think we have a pretty good idea of what kind of players they are. Not being scouts, right? We don't have that refined scout eye, but we watch these guys all the time, and there's some value in that.
Yes.
So I think
we got a radar guard now. Thank you to James Shipman, who was my mentor with all this, and we got a good deal on that. But in terms of Cleet Thomas, Ryan Rayburn. Wow. I know I struggled there. Real quick, Stan, in terms of the impact of Fu being available in the minor leaguers, I don't know if you saw, Chris, I'm going to pull see if I can find that tweet. But so we asked, when we were at West Michigan and we did it for media day, we asked about the biggest impact Scott Harris has had. And within 3 seconds, Isaac Pacheco and Jace Young said, the food is different. They talked about how they're having nutritionists. Even during the Erie Altoona game, they had announced a nutritionist for the curve, which is something I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And now they have a nutritionist in Erie too. And it's making a big, big difference because it was like, I'm trying to think of an example. I think about it this way. I think what the minor leaguer players had before was a 7-Eleven lunch, which is when you go, okay, so you think about it this way, you go to 7-Eleven, right? Full well, you look at that, you walk in your left on the counter. There's just the taquitos there. There's the Big Bite hot dogs. They look like they're rock hard and they look disgusting. They got those egg rolls and they got the pizza slices that for a fact are just soaking in oil. Over 1,000 grams of sodium and just a teensy winty bite. And you go straight ahead and they have what's considered the fresh vegetable section, which is fruit in a cup. It's also got sugar in it. It's got Lunchables and those pickles. For whatever reason, they have like pickles in a bag, and they have apples, and then they have random other stuff. And then you go to the right, of course, they have all the drinks. I think, and then you have the bags of chips. I think up till this year, I think from what we saw, the minor leaguers were eating 7-Eleven lunches. Essentially, those kind of what you get, just a simple, or even if you go to Jimmy John's, get catering, you get the sandwich, even half a sandwich, if that. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that he really pointed out, Young pointed out, was you can get protein whenever you want it, he said. And I was like, oh, that just made me think that before they probably just had all sorts of carbs for him, right? You guys are working up a lot of energy. You got to burn off these carbs. And so, like, breads and pizzas and things like that. And now they can get, like, chicken and salmon and various protein things, which is, I don't know, you think that would be self-explanatory, obvious for teams to do, but we've seen what teams do to cut corners in the minors for many years now. And I don't know, I think they're just finally taking a real interest in making sure that their players have what they need to succeed in the minors and then on into the major leagues, which is good to see.
Yeah, definitely. On that note, thanks so much. We'll be back next week. You can look by the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or listen to podcasts. And you can find all the great content over at TigerMLReport.com. And again, if you want to subscribe to our Patreon, there it is, patreon.com/Tigers Minor League Report. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good week, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Exquisite.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.